It definitely feels like things are picking up speed at the moment. Hello and welcome to the No More Do Better podcast. I'm your host, Lisa Patrick Reed. And before we get started in today's chapters, which are within physical health, just going to give you a quick update on how things are going with me. So since self-publishing the first book, which currently isn't available because it's with an editor, the speed at which things have been moving is actually kind of mind-boggling at times. So at first it was, I'll just publish the book and, you know, make a few sales and keep writing. And since then, because I have tapped into the ability to just grow and change and adapt through everything that I learned and shared in that book, so much has happened since then. So I published two more books. So one of them is available. The other one is now one of the top five recommended books on bookclubs.com for March 2024, which is super exciting. And there's been so much growth. So we've also, I've launched the course, the Redefine Yourself, How to Identify and Rewrite Your Base Programming. We've also launched our own online sales platform, copytweaker.com, and have been learning so much about my husband and I have been learning so much about ourselves and how to run a business and everything that we need to do there and how to really reach people and help people. So it's been a pretty amazing journey, actually. So just from a broader update, copytweaker.com is live. If you have a business idea or want to start a side hustle or have something that you want to share with people and you don't know how to reach them and you don't know how to get started, you can use copytweaker.com. So you can create landing pages almost instantly, to be honest. It takes me like minutes to create landing pages now. So within minutes, you can have a page up and running, a web page up and running that can collect leads. You can sell a product. You can book calls and consultations. You can have your video sales letters and webinars. You can redirect people to services and applications, and you can have thank you pages. And the reason behind all of those things is so that you can reach people with what it is that you're trying to help them with, or to sell, or what services and products there is that you want to bring into the world. And at first, when I started getting into the world of sales and marketing, it felt really sleazy and I didn't like it. But I've sort of really come to the understanding and embraced and internalized the idea that you can't help people that you can't reach. And if you have good intention and you want to serve people, you want to help people become their best selves, or you want to serve the world in your own unique way with whatever it is that you have to offer the world, then this is a way for you to reach people. And you kind of have to learn sales and marketing to do that. And if you're on that journey, that's awesome. Let us support you with Copy Tweaker. You start free and you only pay as you grow. And as you start using it, we're still in beta. So any feedback, we're rewarding with free premium packages and all that sort of stuff. And anything you get stuck on or you need help with, from the broader of what on earth do you do for sales and marketing, how do you launch your products, etc., down to the detail of how do you do certain things within Copy Tweaker, let me know and I'll create videos and upload them on YouTube to help yourself and everyone else who is in the same boat as you. So if you don't ask, I can't help. Anyway, so let's dive into... Before I dive in, I'll also tell you, at the moment, I've been focusing my activity on Threads. So I found Threads, which for anyone who doesn't know is like the Twitter/X. It's the Facebook version of, it's Meta's version of X, formerly known as Twitter. Stuff changes quickly. So I've been finding it to be a really useful community and really uplifting and empowering, and I've met some really interesting people. And since being on Threads, I've now done two more podcast interviews, which once they're available on the host podcasts, I will add those episodes onto the No More Do Better podcast, so you can access them here as well. But yeah, it's actually been fun. So I've finally gotten to the point of sales and marketing and trying to reach people in a way that feels good rather than feels like stress or frustration. It's now a fun learning curve for me. And I would love to help you, whoever you are and whatever it is that you're trying to change the world with. I'd love to help you bypass the crappy bit and get straight into the part that you enjoy. So you can DM me on Instagram if you would like mentorship or guidance, or if you've got any questions. It's at PercheReed, or you can also contact me at CopyTweaker, depending on how and where you want your focus. And it also doesn't matter, it's me behind both accounts. So whichever one you message, you're going to get me. Okay, and without any further ado, let's dive into today's chapters. Now, I will call out that I haven't edited physical health in ages. I think I say that from a position of a little bit of self-doubt of, I can't remember what I wrote here, and it might be, I wrote most of physical health prior to mental and emotional health. So if you remember at the beginning of mental and emotional health, I shared the idea that I thought physical health went meant to go first, until I found studies that showed that often the underlying issues for eating disorders were related to mental and emotional health, like a high percentage of probably all of them, to be honest. So I then switched to mental and emotional health. And personally, I've done a lot of growing and learning from the personal growth and the mental and emotional health, and I haven't gone back to revisit physical. So there might be some things that I say here that we'll just have to take with a grain of salt of, I didn't know better at the time, and I did the best with what I knew, and let's just make sure I'll adjust and learn before actually publishing the book. So step four. We're in physical health. Step four, restore your healthy body composition. First chapter, rebuild your understanding of nutrition, a healthy diet, and body weight. Let's just start out by calling out a few things explicitly. It is possible to be within the recommended weight range or body fat percentage of your age and height and still be unhealthy. It is possible to eat a healthy diet and still be over or under the recommended weight or body fat percentage. It is possible to be within the recommended weight range or body fat percentage whilst eating an unhealthy diet. I found myself struggling to figure out how to write most of the physical health section initially because I didn't know how to make that point clear. Then I decided it would be best to just call it out specifically and then tackle weight range and body fat percentage separately from healthy diet. That might seem counterintuitive, but as we progress, I hope it will make more sense. So how can all of these seemingly contradictory statements be true? Because our body fat percentage and weight is altered via calories and exercise, but not all calories are equal, and neither is all exercise equal. It is possible to be a marathon runner who eats a terribly unhealthy diet and yet still be thin because the energy of calories consumed is burned off during training. Generally, I've found that people who train for marathons tend to be more health conscious or health focused and therefore tend to have a healthier diet. And by the way, that's a massive generalization, so take it with a grain of salt. But it is entirely possible to be unhealthy and look fit. This might seem very confusing, and I'll be honest, it was for me too initially. So let's tackle weight first. Weight is driven by what is often referred to as calories in and calories out. It is a basic math equation of food intake versus energy expenditure. That is to say, it is about whether we are burning off as much, more than, or less than the amount of energy we consume through food and drink, which we delve into in a lot more detail under managed calorie intake, which I think is actually like one or two chapters ahead of where we are right now. It is entirely possible to eat unhealthy food, so that is food of low or not low or no nutritional value, and lose or gain weight. Body fat percentage, which is the ratio of fat to muscle in the body, requires both calorie control and effort in terms of exercise, particularly resistance and hypertrophy training, all to be discussed under separate sections. In order to build muscle, we need to consume sufficient protein for muscle synthesis and muscle building, and that is where the idea of macronutrients comes into play. Macronutrients for humans are protein, fat, and carbohydrates, which are all necessary for the body for different reasons. despite some fad diets singling out one or another as bad. Nutritional health is the next level of detail, which involves something called micronutrients, which covers all of the vitamins, minerals, prebiotics, probiotics, and so on that we get from nutritionally dense food, and sometimes supplemented through supplements. I personally have a bit of a gripe with the nutrition and fitness industry because, in general, I believe that this breakdown is intentionally muddled up for the purposes of profit, keeping people in the dark and confused about how to really take care of their health in order to keep them reliant and returning to diets where there's money to be made. It is entirely possible to lose weight, any level of weight, even extreme obesity, without any diet pills, shakes, or even a gym membership. A lot of people won't do it because it's just plain hard work and requires consistency, but it is entirely possible to do without buying into any one diet or plan. There are a lot of mixed messages out there related to health, some of which I think is hard to wade through intentionally because there are too many funded studies by companies and people with profit to gain from it. So I'm going to try my best to clear up as much of the confusion as I possibly can. I will be clear on the parts that I'm not sure on because there are still some areas I just can't seem to pin down a clear answer on myself yet. On the topic of a healthy diet and which diet to choose, there are lots of different diets out there, and I have spent a lot of time reading through different diets that people swear by for different reasons to try to identify what the optimal diet really is. The conclusion that I've come to is that there is no single one-size-fits-all answer because we are all unique and our body requirements are all therefore unique. And not just that, we also have cultural differences and personal preferences and all those sorts of things. This would arguably be the most controversial part of this whole book because of how strongly different diet advocates support their choices. But there are some universal principles that I have found that seem to apply for healthy body and brain function, agnostic of diet choice. The total number of calorie intake versus calorie expenditure impacts overall weight gain, loss, or maintenance. All macronutrients are required, but the percentage and balance between those macronutrients will be different to suit our individual needs. No single macronutrient is bad. They are all necessary, but the needs of amount required appear to be different from person to person. Diversity of micronutrients, meaning vitamins and minerals, through high nutrient-dense food and at times supplementation, are a necessity for overall body and brain function. It is best to minimize or avoid highly processed foods as they are a significant cause of ill health and a multitude of ill health related diseases and sicknesses. And consistent poor eating habits and choices, irrelevant of choice of diet, affect mood, mental health, and cause sickness and can also lead to early death. So irrelevant of which diet you buy into, those seem to be the key points. So never fear, we will cover all the points above in much more detail. For the time being though, let us focus on different diet choices. One truth I have definitely found is that there is a lot of misinformation and conflicting information available regarding diets and diet choices. There are multiple reasons for this, and the biggest three I have observed are firstly, that people passionately support any diet that worked for their specific health needs without grasping the concept that we are all different and have different needs. Our individual dietary needs are dependent on age, baseline health, day-to-day activities, underlying past health conditions, allergies and intolerances, gut microbiome diversity or lack thereof, and personal preferences related to environmental impacts or religious and cultural beliefs and practices, as well as plain old likes and dislikes. We are all different and unique, and therefore our needs are all different and unique, and they change throughout our lifetime as we undergo change. Secondly, since everyone eats, many people consider themselves to be some level of expert in food, despite actual qualification or grounded research. So many famous social media influencers seem to speak to and support specific diet choices without really having done grounded research for or against, as well as into other diet choices for and against. This can create very siloed views on diets that seems to lead to zealots who avidly support one single diet over all others, with strong bias towards their diet and against any diet presented to them as an option. Thirdly, There is a lot of money to be made from selling diet plans, diet pills, quick fix solutions to people who yo-yo diet, so jump from one diet to the next and back to poor habits in between. The actual truth about diets is unpopular to the general population because it is not a quick win. Successful dieting to adjust body composition requires consistent effort over prolonged periods of time. I'm sorry to be the bringer of bad news, but a lot of healthy eating and healthy weight management comes down to pure and simple maths, as well as adherence and consistency to overall healthful choices. As with everything we've covered throughout this whole series, there is no quick win, no cheat, no hack, and no shortcut. It requires hard work and consistency over time. Once we truly accept that to be the case, and I promise you that is the case, then we can stop buying into every new fad that we're advertised through social media influencers, all hoping to make a quick buck off of our desperation and confusion. I have a high respect for people who focus on the science and evidence-based advice such as Huberman Lab, whose goal is to share science and science-based tools behind how to improve our health, and at BioLane Norton, who thoroughly researches and debunks a lot of the social media diet claims to separate fact from fiction. I will make specific note in the context of Become a Critical Thinker that we cover in intellectual health that Andrew Huberman, at Huberman Lab, provides his information as part of a personal goal to share science-based knowledge in the public domain. And Lane Norton, at BioLane Norton, does profit through his own dieting app, but he makes no secret of that, and he consistently seeks out scientifically backed research to determine whether dieting claims are true or not. I also have no affiliation to either of those influencers. I just personally choose to follow them as I appreciate the well-researched, science-backed content that they produce. It is also prudent to call out that even within their separate work and references, I have found conflicts between advice, specifically on areas such as sugar and whether refined sugar is bad for us or if it's fine in moderation. Although, at the time of writing this, I hadn't had access to, there is an episode, I think, on Huberman's lab where Lane Norton comes in, and I have not heard that episode yet, and I need to prioritize that because I'm super excited to hear it. Anyway, back to it. From my research, despite advocates from every diet arguing that their choice is the best one, there appears to be pros and cons to most of the popular diets. The exact diet that works for me may not work for you. The exact diet that works for you may not work for the next person. Unfortunately, as we'll cover in intellectual health, a lot of people are caught up in their own cognitive bias when it comes to diet and food and struggle to see past it. Personally, I look into almost every diet that is brought to my attention, because I too am in search of the optimum diet, but each time I find that there are some truths and some narrow-mindedness to each and every one. For the purposes of transparency, these are the general guidelines I personally follow, or aim to follow at least 80% of the time for my own diet. Consume regularly. Try and consume organic, chemical-free foods, organic, nutrient-dense plant-based foods, lean, organic, pasture-raised meats, and wild-caught or ethically farmed fish where possible. I try and create diversity amongst the amount of plant-based foods that I consume each week. I try to go for seasonally available produce where possible, and I take vitamins and supplements to plug the gap of any micronutrients that I know are missing from my diet. I try to limit the intake of processed and junk foods, prepackaged foods, excess salt, processed sugar, non-organic foods, and emulsifiers. And I try to minimize and avoid preservatives and additives, including food coloring, processed meats and meats produced using unhealthy farming techniques, highly or ultra-processed foods of any kind, personal allergies, anything that causes anaphylaxis or hives, personal intolerances, including foods that cause excess gas, vomiting, upset stomach, body odor, significant change in bowel movements, or that negatively impact my sleep, concentration, performance in some way. Foods that noticeably negatively affect my mood. Excess calorie consumption, even from the consume regularly list. Alcohol or food with high refined added sugar. Don't get me wrong. I still eat a flexible diet. And I bend or break my above rules here and there. I love a good dumpling, and there are times in life when I'm too exhausted to cook and will eat whatever is on offer with minimal effort. But day in, day out, I have a predictable diet and I stick to my guidelines 80 to 90% of the time. The food I avoid is also related to my household's overall allergies and intolerances. And out of general safety and concern as a family, we tend to avoid the foods that any one of us can't consume or touch. At the time of writing this, I'm in the process of setting up my own personal organic vegetable garden and orchard for direct garden to plate. And in the meantime, I'm reliant on local produce, which at times does not align with my general guidelines. Aside from that, almost every day of the year for breakfast, I have... Oh, this is interesting. I wrote this ages ago, so this is no longer true, but I'll update it after. Aside from that, almost every day of the year for breakfast, I have plant protein smoothie with oat milk, a banana, flaxseed, hemp hearts, and chia seeds, sometimes with a scoop of powdered vitamins if I've been unwell or I'm feeling depleted. Sometimes I alternate this with oats and honey. I happen to be someone who can happily eat my staple meals day in and day out with little to no change and be perfectly content. Other people might find that boring and need much more variety on a daily basis. That too is down to personal preference. For me, I focus on a variety of micronutrients by trying to eat the colors of the rainbow. in fruits and vegetables and taking daily vitamins as recommended by a naturopath and dietitian to supplement anything I'm missing. But in terms of actual variety, I'm generally pretty satisfied with minimal variety most of the time, as long as I have diversity covered with my staple go-tos. The vitamins and supplements that I take are personalized based on blood tests to see if there's anything I'm low on, general goals of diversity of nutrient sources, including pre and probiotics, and a holistic view of my current health. So how much sleep I'm getting, how stressed I am when I was breastfeeding or healing postpartum, healing from any injuries, etc. So let's discuss a few key nutritional debates out there separately. We'll start with sugar. There are a lot of opinions on sugar being unhealthy and inflammatory. Personally, I believed sugar to be inflammatory and linked to leaky gut for a long time. And then when I let my cognitive bias down and looked into the research-backed facts, I found out that while the link between sugar and inflammatory disease does exist, it appears to be related to the tendency for high sugar-laden foods to be consumed in excess and therefore resulting in higher calorie consumption, which leads to weight gain and inflammation. Which I think we talked about in Learn How Neurotransmitters Affect You and How You Affect Them. In a study on the effect of sucrose on inflammatory markers in overweight humans, it was observed that, quote, high consumption of sugar, sweetened foods, and drinks increase haptoglobin and transferrin, but had at best only limited influence on CRP. Sorensen, LB, 2005. In plain English, while there were obvious effects of sugar in the body, the markers for inflammation did not increase with sugar intake versus artificial sweeteners. Upon further investigation, I found many documentaries to support the argument that sugar is quite misunderstood. While it contains calories, when it is refined sugars, it is not nutritional. This basically means while it is energy, there isn't anything else really of benefit in it. So many people are aware of alcohol being empty calories, but sugar is arguably in a similar category. I carried the belief for a long time that high GI meant bad for us and low GI meant good for us. However, I then watched a lecture from Dr. Robert Lustig and learned that if we applied the glycemic index measurement to vegetables, then carrots, as an example, would be considered terrible for us. So what I have personally observed is that sugar can affect and dysregulate my mood and significantly affect and dysregulate the moods of my young children. And sometimes I notice that I'll get pimples or acne if I've consumed it and not burned it off. For this reason, I tend to avoid processed sugar unless I'm actively burning it off immediately after consumption through some form of physical exercise. I do not limit my plant-based natural sugars, however. I will happily eat fruit throughout the day. This is for me personally, and the best summarization I can make is that overall, it appears that refined sugars aren't adding any benefit to our diets, but they are increasing our risks of all sorts of metabolic diseases, and they are included, arguably somewhat under the radar, in pretty much all processed and packaged food. We are therefore likely consuming more refined sugar than we realize if we are consuming a diet in high processed foods. So, let's jump into vegan and vegetarian diets. I've seen argument and evidence both for and against the consumption of meat, and here are my personal findings. From an environmental and sustainability perspective, excess consumption of meat and meat industry-based products can be damaging. Also, the mass production farming techniques that produce unhealthy meat filled with antibiotics can cause cancer, covered in significant detail in Greger's book, How Not to Die. Fish is in a similar boat in terms of unsustainable and ecologically damaging fish farming and fishing practices from an environmental perspective. I have not yet found science-based evidence against limited consumption of organic, pasture-raised or wild-caught unprocessed meat or wild-caught sustainably sourced fish and seafood. In fact, I have seen several references to suggest that it can be good for us. From my broader research, I have seen evidence that limited meat consumption can be healthy. This is based on our evolution as explored in The Perfect Human Diet Hunt 2012, and on the habits of centenarians who often had similar diets of the Mediterranean-style diets, high in fresh fruit and vegetables, with fish, with red meat less frequently, weekly, fortnightly, or monthly, as covered in The Blue Zones by Buettner 2012. It is important to note that the meat consumption needs to be reduced drastically or limited to avoid the dangerous environmental impacts, which we'll cover in more detail under being sustainable in collective health. There are also significant health impacts of overconsumption of meat. However, limited, lean, organic, and or even wild meat consumption appears to have health benefits. We will cover environmental impacts of diet choices under Be Sustainable. But from what I can gather from reviewing countless studies to determine what the perfect diet is, irrelevant of diet choice, what really seems to matter is how health conscious we are as individuals. The more health conscious we are, the less highly processed foods we choose to consume, the more nutritionally beneficial food we consume, and the more conscious and healthful choices we make regularly towards healthier eating. This is different from being strictly ketogenic, paleo, vegan, or any other diet, and eating technically within the guidelines. Oh, and eating technically within the guidelines of the diet, but not necessarily healthfully. Oh, sorry. That point I was trying to make is you can eat within the guidelines of a diet, but still choose unhealthy foods, if that makes sense. So you could, for example, choose to cut out gluten if you're going for a gluten-free diet, but still choose things that aren't healthy for you. So agnostic of diet choice, moderation and healthful choices are key. I personally think governments have a lot to answer for in allowing food industry lobbyists to skew the public knowledge of how to eat healthy for the benefit of financial gain of those industries. Breakfast is the most important meal of the day. I think that's a claim from the breakfast cereal industry, not based on fact, if you take into account all the learnings around fasting. The food pyramid is based on particular food industry lobbying and fails to address the basic knowledge required to maintain a healthy and balanced diet, irrelevant of diet choice. Yes, meat, grain, and dairy industries, I'm pointing the finger at you. Dairy, meat, and grains are not necessary for a healthy diet, and teaching our children that they are a necessary part of our diets and prescribing how much of each particular food is required is unhealthy and unethical. What is useful to society is to understand how to make informed choices and to understand the link between what we consume versus our overall physical health. Therefore, what we'll cover in this section are those key pieces of information that were skipped over in school, where we were instead taught misinformation about food based on sponsored or biased studies and opinions. Okay, now that I've got that preamble out of the way, let's get stuck into the detail. This is probably one of the most information-dense sections of the whole book series, so get yourself comfortable. There's no shame in needing to reread or re-listen again if it doesn't fully sink in the first round. So we're at 30 minutes now. I think we'll end this episode here, and next time we're going to start talking about how to keep yourself honest by keeping track, how to calculate your TDE, how to manage calorie and kilojoule intake to create a deficit, surplus, or maintenance based on your need, how to find the right balance of macronutrients, understanding other factors that may result in weight issues, etc. So we're going to go into all that, but I just wanted to get firstly to the point of understanding that there is no one right diet to follow. But I wanted to really make the point with today's episode that there isn't really one diet that has to be followed. There is no one size fits all when it comes to diet. There are things that will work for you that don't work for me, and there will things that that work for me and don't work for you. And I can be very specific with an example there. I have experienced anaphylaxis from soy and nuts, so I don't eat them. But nuts, for example, have a lot of wonderful benefits that could benefit somebody who doesn't have that allergy. So there is one very simple and straightforward example of one diet does not fit all. And if you can understand that and whatever diet you choose to follow, have an open mind about what within that diet aligns to the bigger picture of your health, and making sure that irrelevant of what diet you choose to stick with or align to longer term, make it one that's maintainable and healthful rather than focusing on what to leave out. Focus on what your body needs. And I think that's the biggest learning is focus on what your body needs, not so much on what you're meant to cut out. So we'll pick up again next episode with Keep Yourself Honest by Keeping Track. And in the meantime, have a lovely day. Mike, scratch that last bit. Mike, you can cut. I personally think the food pyramid is based on excess gas.